This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Christine Wong, and you're listening to Enterprise. Today, I'm speaking to Mark Lovett, CEO of Trident Integrity, a leading-edge consultancy firm expert at strengthening integrity infrastructure in organizations across Malaysia and the Asia-Pacific region. Now, as part of our International Anti-Corruption Day feature, we'll be speaking today about organizational health in companies and, you know, how to prevent or heal the areas affected by corruption in the business world. So, first of all, thank you so much for speaking to us today.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
All right. So first of all, let's just talk about the what of it all, right? Because corruption in Malaysia is a very hot button topic, but it's also a very big topic, and it's very difficult to discuss it without feeling like it's something very overwhelming. Before we get into what is wrong, let's start with the basics. What is organizational health?
Okay. So this is a concept that's been around for a few years now, and it's the idea that an organization functions a bit like any other organism. And any organism that's going to do well and thrive in life has to be strong, healthy, not held back by a disease or a virus or some kind of disability. So if an organization is going to do well in the marketplace, it's got to be agile, strong, athletic even. So if it's healthy, it can do all these things. But if it's unhealthy, then it's going to be severely held back. And I think what we see with this concept of organizational health is that companies that have strong organizational health consistently do much better than companies that are unhealthy. And I'm referring here to a McKinsey report which brings this up. So McKinsey identified 9 areas with 37 indicators about how healthy an organization proves to be. And a lot of them are actually affected by this area of corruption in one way or another.
So can you break down for us some of these 37 items? Not all of them, obviously. We would never have enough time. But at least some of the more major ones that you can look out for.
Sure. So I think the obvious one is your financials. Are you doing well? Is your company making money in line with what you'd expect for what you do? And of course, profitability depends a lot on the industry. But if your peer companies are doing well and you're not, then clearly there's something wrong. So if you go to a doctor and you're not feeling right, and you know you're short of breath, you lack energy, and so on, then clearly there's something wrong with you. And equally, if your financials are weak when they should be strong, there's something wrong with your company in the same way. But it's other things as well. So it might be, for example, how bought in are your employees to your business? Are your staff really aligned to your vision, the way you operate, your values, and so on? If the answer is yes, you get a very high sense of ownership. People feel strongly that this is my company. I want to do the best for you. And because the company is something that I believe in, then I'm passionate about it. If the staff buy-in is weak, then you don't get that. People turn up for work, they do their job, and they go home again. Now, what we find is that if there are things going on in the company that turn people off, immediately you lose that buy-in. So if you do, for example, a staff survey and you ask these questions, do you believe in the company? Do you feel strongly that this is where you should be and the results are poor? It means that there's something not quite right. And I think in terms of the impact that corruption has is if your boss is on the take and is exploiting his position, then of course you're not going to trust him. You're not going to give your all. And one thing that we see happening with corrupted companies is often smart people recognize the signs. And they're the ones who are most valuable, not just to your organization, but to other organizations as well. They can move. So over a period of a number of years, you get this kind of gravitational shift where the good people move on and the people that perhaps don't add too much value to the company get very embedded. And that's really when you get this long-term health problem.
So it becomes kind of a vicious cycle in a way. This is something that I think is really important for Malaysia specifically, right? Because we have a very big issue with power distance. We often feel that the people who are in power can essentially do whatever they want and we'll let them because they're in power and we should do that because who are we, right? Yeah. To be able to question the actions of our leaders or our bosses or our managers, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. It's not just about bare bones facts. It's not just about the figures. It's not just about the money. In terms of company culture as well, that can really come across. And it's very important for all of those to come together in one cohesion.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I think you mentioned this sense of power distance. And that can actually happen on a national scale. And I think we see very clear correlations between the Transparency International Corruption Perception Index, which is the worldwide survey that's published every year, and things like the ease of doing business, the GDP per head, and other key statistics which show whether Malaysia is an attractive place to work. Now, what we see with this issue of power distance is that if people at the top are demonstrating clear values of integrity, then they secure the buy-in of the people. But if that isn't happening, and I'm not saying it isn't happening, I'm just saying for countries where it isn't happening.
Hypothetically,
you get a lot of migration of top-end people. So the educated ones, the ones with a good career track, they look around and they move to countries where they feel that they're going to be recognized and supported, and they can buy into that company country culture, and perhaps not so much where they are there.
Okay, so let's just talk about the financial aspect of that a little bit more, and just the facts and figures and stuff. So how does corruption affect all of that?
Yeah, I think we normally talk about two types of corruption, inbound and outbound. Inbound is where people from outside the company are trying to corrupt your people. Normally, it's in the area of procurement in one way or another, but it can affect sections like HR or even the legal department in some circumstances. So inbound corruption tends to impact procurement. And there are figures which show us from the World Economic Forum that corruption costs add about, on average, 25% to the cost of procurement contracts in developing countries. Now, if you think about that, that companies are actually paying 25% more for goods and services than their competitors may be. So immediately your bottom line is reduced because of your increased cost. But it's not just how much they're paying, it's the quality of what they're getting. So if, for example, you want to secure, you want to purchase new smartphones for your company, and the contract's awarded to the wrong company, and this actually happened to me personally. The first smartphone I bought turned out to be, it wasn't new, although it looked new, and I paid the price of a new phone. It was actually a reconditioned phone. And after 3 weeks, the phone would ring, but when you swiped the screen, it wouldn't unlock.
Oh, dear.
So, and then later on, it would actually start dialing through my phone list. And so I'd be working away and there'd be a little, hello, hello. And it turned out that I'd phoned somebody at random from my phone. So is that a good phone? Of course not. Now, if the contract's awarded to the wrong company, rather than you getting brand new Samsung S8s or whatever, then they give you a reconditioned model that's where 30% of the phones are actually faulty, then you've got a serious problem. And these things really impact not just productivity, but this whole thing of culture and buy-in. Because when people get equipment that doesn't work, they kind of lose interest in the job. They can't give their all because if they try, they get frustrated. So they kind of switch off. And then they get bored and then they look around, and this is when you get the brain drain happening.
It's a sense of trust, right? Because if you trust in your company, you are allowed to do things in your company. You're allowed to innovate, you're allowed to create, you're allowed to inspire, and you're allowed to create a good product, whatever that product may be. But when it comes to the fact that if your company doesn't have any integrity, you lose trust in it. And that makes it very, very difficult for you to be able to do your job right. And then that in turn affects the company as a whole.
Correct. That's right. And that culture of trust, innovation, excitement about your work is killed when you get corruption, when it becomes endemic in any organization. And that applies as much to public as much to private sector.
Right, I see. So corruption in Malaysia is kind of a thing that people talk about a lot, but they also don't, if that makes any sense. It's something that goes a little bit under the radar. It's something that we know is happening, but we're not brave enough to discuss it a lot of the time, because the moment you bring it up, it gets ugly, right? Mm. It's an ugly topic. There's no denying that. But I think about 30% of companies in Malaysia experienced bribery and corruption in 2015, and then 13% of those reported losses of about R1 million.
That's right.
Why do you think it is that so many companies are affected like this, but then no one really talks about it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's down to awareness. And this question of can you really talk about it is something that is very significant, I think. I guess one thing that I find endlessly interesting about a Westerner from the UK living in Malaysia is this whole question of how do people handle issues that they're not comfortable with. So in the UK, people are quite confrontational, not as much as in America, I'm glad to say. But we tend to take the approach, let's just get it out and deal with it and then deal with it. I think Malaysians, and this is one thing I really like about Malaysia, Malaysians are much more gentle. And they're very cautious about raising sensitive issues of any kind. And I think in some ways that's a great quality of the culture. But I think the downside can be that some things like this, which really should be brought out and dealt with properly, people tend to just kind of let it slip by. Talking to people who've lived here for many years, what's very interesting is that 10, 15 years ago, no one would even discuss this. So having this this time would be unthought of, as far as I can gather. So the conversation is happening. And then the question is, so what do you do about it? And I would say that Malaysian companies are looking at this seriously. How do we deal with this so that the inbound issues are dealt with and our costs are reduced and the quality of our goods and services are improving? But also the other critical issue is, how do we manage outbound corruption? Because for many years, it's been quite common, to provide a little extra something for people who give you the contract, or to use gifts and hospitality to cultivate that relationship with the decision maker and so on. So that's becoming less and less acceptable. And one area is this whole thing of festive gifts. So can you deliver festive hampers to the manager of the department where you're supplying regularly? And up until now, it's been quite common, but more and more companies, especially GLCs, are saying no to this. So the culture is changing. And I guess what we're seeing is that gradual shift away from this is how we do it to actually international practice is like this, let's follow that. And that's a very healthy sign.
All right. Fantastic. I think, now that we've kind of talked a lot about what corruption is and what organizational health is and how everything is affected, what are the next steps that we can take in order to not only identify, but now fix the issue? So after the break, Mark Lovett and I will be discussing how to fight against corruption within the workplace. Stay tuned to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Christine Wong and you're listening to Enterprise. I'm speaking to Mark Lovett, CEO of Trident Integrity, all about the concept of anti-corruption and organizational health in the workplace. Now, before the break, we discussed what organizational health is, which is essentially the health of your company, and how corruption is essentially like a virus. And once it gets a hold, it's very difficult to break out of that system. It leads to a weakness in company culture. It leads to a lack of trust. So every problem needs a solution. How do we fix this?
Yeah, I think there are three things I would suggest to companies. One is this very important factor of tone from the top. And I came across a very useful concept recently called the trust equation. And this is something that I think carries a lot of weight in this area. So how do people reach a position of trust? And what we've got is three factors that build trust. One is credibility. Are you actually good at what you do? Do you know your stuff? Second one is reliability. Do you follow through? Do you do what you promise to do? Are you there when people need you? And the third one is this area of intimacy. Do people feel like they're connected to you, that they know who you really are? And when you have those three things together, then what you get is trust. People know that you're good at your job, they can rely on you, and they feel like they really know you and know what you're going to do. But there's a denominator, which is self-orientation. And self-orientation is when really your agenda is what's in it for me, what's good for me. And the bigger that element is, then the smaller the impact of the other three together, because it's a denominator. The first three add up, but the self-orientation denominator divides it. So the bigger that factor, the less trust there is.
Let's say you are a candidate that exhibits all these qualities. You have credibility, you have reliability, you have intimacy, you're a team worker. And you enter a company that doesn't necessarily do well for you, even though you're exhibiting all the signs that you should. Is that actually kind of a way to tell that a company is affected by these issues?
Yeah, I think we have to make sure that we don't cross corruption with organizational health,
because
they are different. So if a company is healthy in that way that McKinsey talked about, then these qualities will be recognized and you will do well. If the company is unhealthy, and it could be a lot of factors, it could just be that it's too old, that you've got the wrong people in the leadership. But if it's unhealthy, then you probably want to think about whether you should be there. But what we find with corruption is that actually it impacts the health of the organization potentially at every level or any level. And the higher up the corruption is, the bigger the impact.
The kind of link here between the trust equation and corruption specifically is that idea of self-orientation, right? Because a lot of the times, if you're tempted in a way to indulge in corruptive behavior, that comes from a place of self-orientation, of wanting something for yourself, not for the sake of the company.
Exactly right. Yeah. And that's why I think this works in our context so well.
So if you start to see these problems arise in your own company, for example, what kind of steps might you take to fix this?
Yeah. And I think this comes very much down to the people. So one question I would ask is, how good are your employment procedures? How do you assess whether you're taking the right people on board. And we've even with our own company, we've had experience with this where people have misrepresented the facts of their CV, for example. So when we've checked back to see whether they really got what they claim to have, then actually they claim to have one class of degree when actually they didn't. So that employment screening, very, very critical. I think the other thing that you need to do is bear in mind that as you promote people, they have more influence. So how do you build into your organization the right gateways to make sure that as people move up the organization, if there are behaviors that give rise to concern, can you pick them up? And then what do you do with it? And if you have people who are clearly a problem, then do you have the legal mechanisms to deal with that? And a lot of companies actually are stuck with staff that they can't get rid of, even though it's pretty clear that they've got a problem because their employment terms and conditions aren't robust enough to deal with that. And I think we see this, I've seen this particularly in the public sector, where once you're in, it's very difficult to deal with corrupted staff. So corrupted staff, rather than being taken out of the organization, they're just transferred around. And that just transfers the problem because then they corrupt the environment where they're working. So if you're a startup, then I think one thing I would suggest is make sure that your position on this whole area of integrity is clear. And it's not just about being honest. It's also about things like delivering what you promise to your customers. It's things like timekeeping. Are you actually doing a good day's work when you come in? So make sure that the tone is right from the beginning. Because just as like any organization, when you started off, you can set direction pretty well in any way you like. But the longer it's operating, the more set things become. So take that opportunity to get it right from the start.
Yeah, I think it's also important to establish things like communication in terms of your boundaries. There's a boundary you don't cross. And I think a lot of companies need to set that as well, would you say?
Absolutely. And I think this is perhaps the critical area. There's a fine line between a normal business lunch and something a bit more sinister. So when we do our programs, most of our work's with the GLCs. So and a lot of them are looking at this at the moment because as international legislation like the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act from the United States and the UK Bribery Act from the UK begin to impact the global environment, Malaysian companies are, sad to say, coming under increasing scrutiny because of issues that are emerging in the public domain worldwide involving some of the companies here. So Malaysian companies are being challenged on this, and often they look at their existing policies and procedures and realize that they haven't really worked this out in detail. So working out the difference between an acceptable gift, maybe a desk calendar and, you know, some kind of token pen or this kind of thing, or a paperweight, the kind of things that normal marketing activity involves, no problem. But when you're looking at more expensive items like iPads or iPhones or luxury holidays for your family and other things, then it's very important that the company makes its position clear. Not just to give guidelines to its staff, but also, again, if the staff are doing things which they shouldn't be, you've got a very clear statement that this is what our people are allowed to do. You haven't been doing that, or you have been doing the wrong thing, so we're going to take the necessary action.
You also mentioned the fact that a lot of international companies are looking at Malaysian companies and saying, hey, there's an issue here. And everyone's reputation is essentially being harmed because of the fact that corruption exists in such a public light when it comes to Malaysian businesses. So I think that's really important to note that, you know, corruption, of course, affects a business from the inside, but also externally as well. When it comes to talking about things like expansion, for example, that can definitely affect your potential relationships with other businesses and other countries because they assume that you may not be genuine.
That's right.
If people think that it's a problem that doesn't affect them, it does.
It does. And actually, I've got a statistic from the Dowager Jones survey done by the New York Stock Exchange a couple of years ago. This is a worldwide survey covering 250 compliance professionals and companies. And out of those surveyed, 76% said that reputational issues would cause a review of their business partners. In other words, if they began to see things coming up on the internet about companies that they were working with, they would take a step back and think, is this a company we should still be involved with? But perhaps more seriously, 68% of those 250 surveyed said that they had actually either delayed or stopped working altogether with a business partner because of concerns about violations of anti-corruption regulations. So if you think that two-thirds of those compliance professionals had basically put a stop order on a relationship with a company, particularly because of concerns about corruption, then you get a real sense of how much this matters these days. And the fines under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act are going up all the time. So the latest one with Utrecht was $2.6 billion. And the UK is now getting into gear as well. So Rolls-Royce got hit by a fine of £671 million this year. And what this means is that companies that are involved with developing economies are increasingly nervous about what's going on. How do I know that the company I'm trying to engage with is actually clean, or am I going to end up with my company in the newspapers a few years down the line?
I mean, I think it's important for a lot of people who have businesses to not only set up these guidelines, but also to follow through, to make sure that these guidelines are being followed all the way through, because you can start off with the best of intentions. Is there a process that can be suggested for people to be able to double check?
Yeah. And I think that depends very much on the size of your company. If you're a small business, then you probably know everybody. You've got your finger on the pulse and you've probably able to pick up if something isn't quite right. So going back to the equipment, if you're getting new phones in and some of them aren't working, clearly there's a problem and you know everybody in your staff, you've got 20 people and you can pick that up very quickly. So the next thing to do, of course, is to work out what's really going on. Find out the source of the problem and deal with it. Now, if you're a big company, then you'll have a much more formalized procedure. So you'll probably have an enterprise risk management procedure. We provide a corruption risk management process, which is very specifically focused on this area. So your ERM will pick up where the challenges are. You can audit on those risk areas and see what you can find. But one area which is, again, very critical to get right is this whole area of whistleblowing. And a lot of Malaysian companies are looking at this very seriously now because they realize that actually whistleblowing, although it carries its issues, a lot of very, very valuable information comes through those channels. And I've got another report which shows that I think it's 49% of all tips came through whistleblowing channels, which they were then able to deal with the issue as a result. So if you get your whistleblowing right, and that isn't easy, but if you do get it right, then it can be incredibly rich source of data, so you can focus those scarce resources on hitting the problem areas before they get too serious.
I mean, again, it's all about awareness, right? It's about talking about it, putting it out in the open, making sure that there are consequences for these kinds of actions and that they are known by people.
That's right.
It's all well and good punishing someone privately, but then to be able to talk about it and say, hey, this is not okay, through a company-wide understanding. Basically, organizational health is key to the success of a company, be they small or big. And corruption comes in when organizational health is weak. From that standpoint, talking about it and also making sure the guidelines are set in place and also making sure that as an individual as well, you follow that trust equation, you have credibility, reliability, intimacy, and you are also working towards what the company needs, not just you. All right. Thank you so much, Mark, for talking to us today about the concepts of organizational health. Unfortunately, that's about all the time we have, but hopefully this will be the beginning of a wider discussion about these issues in Malaysia.
Yeah, nice to talk to you.
All right. Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Mark Lovett, CEO of Trident Integrity. This is Christine Wong, and you've been listening to Enterprise. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.